All right, I figured out what happened, and here's what I did. Yesterday, when I left, I got to figure out how to fix it. I had to be out yesterday, and what happens is, a lot of you just listen to the radio stream. Many of you come into the chart room, but a lot of you listen to the radio stream. And what happens is on days that I'm away, you don't know I'm going to be away, but you log on and you start sending emails to me, to Michael, to David, Colin Burton, Leslie. Hey, I'm trying to listen to the radio program. There's some guy preaching. What's going on? So I turned off the radio server yesterday and put a recorded message that said, hey, I'm not here today. And I put that thing to repeat, to play over and over until I got back, to prevent you from being confused and to know that you needed to go into the chart room if you wanted to participate in the radio program. Okay? I thought that was pretty clever. And I figured out how to make it just keep repeating, looping. Well, what happened is when I opened up today's show, the intro played beautifully, like it's supposed to, and then it looped. Now I got to figure out how to unloop this thing. But I've got the weekend, so between now and Monday, I'll do my very, very best to figure it out. Okay, we were out yesterday. Monday we had a holiday. There's a lot to cover. Michael had a great day in the live trading room today. I want to make sure we have plenty of time for that. I want to get out to David Williams at Page Trader, talk to him. Coming up today at 3 p.m. Eastern, we have the Coach's Corner with Ms. Robin Dane, the trading coach. And there's just a ton of new stuff that we haven't even covered this week. So I'm going to throw a couple little pieces out, and then maybe we'll talk about a couple other pieces throughout the radio program today. And maybe I'll talk about some at the end of the show, and maybe we'll save some of it for Monday. This one I meant to talk about on Tuesday, Beyonce. Beyonce lip-synced her performance at the inauguration. She also forced the Marine Corps band to pretend to be playing their instruments. Kristen Dubois, spokesperson for the band, said the Marine band did perform live throughout the ceremony, but we received last-minute word that Beyonce wanted to use a recording. Now, the Marine Corps band has confirmed that it, along with Beyonce, faked Monday's national anthem at President Obama's second inaugural. Band director Colonel Michael Colburn conducted the Star-Spangled Banner energetically, but the band members were actually mimicking blowing into their instruments. Air guitars, anyone? Nothing like a bunch of U.S. Marines pantomiming the country's anthem at the president's inauguration. Though interestingly, some would argue that the president's own are just a bunch of lip syncers themselves. They don't go to boot camp, don't deploy, but still wear the uniform rather smartly. I didn't say that. I'm just reading it. The fake music was a cherry on top of an otherwise hollow performance all around. The president's own inauguration was in effect a lip sync, since he was officially inaugurated in front of Chief Supreme Court Justice John Roberts a day earlier. So, well, that's that. That's that one writer's take on the inauguration. I'm not saying that's what I'm... We should talk about Michelle Obama's epic eye roll that she gave John Boehner, but we'll skip over that. Really quick, we should probably talk about Germany. knock, knock, they want their gold back. Have you guys heard about this? Last week, the Bundesbank, the German central bank, surprised markets around the world by announcing that it will repatriate a sizable portion of its gold bullion reserves held in France and the United States. To many, the news from the world's second largest holder of gold signaled a growing, if clandestine, mistrust among central banks, possibly fueled by diverging policy goals. The Germans have attempted to tamp down the alarm by highlighting the myriad of logistical, practical, and historical reasons that qualified the announcement as unremarkable. But the size, scope, and timing of the move makes it hard not to draw more strategic conclusions. Coming during a time of supposed central bank cooperation, the decision to withdraw billions of dollars of bullion was bound to raise eyebrows. At present, Germany has official gold holdings of some 3,396 tons. That's T-O-N-N-E-S. 150,000 tons reside in New York and 374,000 tons in Paris. Between now and 2020, Germany will repatriate 674 tons of gold, 300 from the Fed in New York, valued at about $18 billion, and the entire 374-ton allotment from Paris, valued at about $22 billion. Although financial leaders like Federal Chairman Ben Bernanke have said that gold is not money, and senior investors like Warren Buffett have described it as a barbarous relic, the movement of gold nevertheless makes a strong emotional impact. Is such a response justified? Coming during a time of supposed central bank cooperation, the decision to withdraw billions of dollars of bullion was bound to raise eyebrows. Although financial leaders like Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke have said that gold is not money, is the response justified? Following World War II, the threat of a sudden Soviet invasion convinced many Western European nations to diversify their gold holdings abroad, particularly the U.S. and the U.K. Today, Germany holds only 31% of its gold on its own soil. Of the remainder, 45% is held at the Federal Reserve in New York, 11% in Paris, 13% in the Bank of England in London. But now that the Russian military threat has dissipated, the Germans have rightly reevaluated its dispositions. Now, I could go on and on with this, but I think you guys know where it's going. You've seen the documentaries. You've heard that Fort Knox doesn't have any gold in it, or much gold, or not the amount it's supposed to have. And these vaults underground at the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, there's a lot of questions about what's really there. Now, what's very interesting is Germany said we want our gold back, but they've given a timeline of like 4 years. They didn't say we want it back today, right now. They've made it clear we want our gold back, but they're giving both the U.S. and France enough time to scrape it together so that, you know, it doesn't become a really big issue. You got to follow this story, guys. We've said it's going to come to, eventually somebody somewhere is going to put a stop to the shenanigans, all this paper gold and all this other stuff, and the day was going to come when somebody's going to say, hey, I want my gold. Well, Germany has done that. They've thrown down the gun. They've said, we want our gold. Now, the problem is, they said, well, but we'll take it in like 3 years or 4 years. So, okay, the Fed and Paris, they got to scramble. They got to come up with the gold. Or maybe they've already got it. Maybe me and all the other conspiracy theorists are just plain wrong. I want to talk about Google and their attempt to own the airwaves. I want to talk about Netflix and what a stunning company that really is. I want to talk to you about Mega. I sent you all out a tweet so that you could go get your own 50 gigs of cloud storage absolutely free from none other than the infamous Kim.com. I hope you took advantage of that. It's free. 50 gigs in the cloud free. That's a good deal. We all know what happened to Apple. It's trading today at a 52-week low. Marissa Mayer, the CEO of Yahoo, has come out and said this is what the new Yahoo is going to be like. Sounds a lot like the old Google. I'll talk more about that. Sheriff Arpaio says he will not refuses to enforce federal gun laws. One of the roller derby girls says she's going to knock Ackman down if Herbalife goes under. And Sunday night, Obama will have his first ever joint interview with Hillary Clinton on 60 Minutes. So that's going to be interesting to see them together in an interview. The president has never done a joint interview with anyone other than Michelle Obama. Did you know that? I did not know that. but Sunday night, he and Hillary Clinton at a picnic table, of all places. Now, listen carefully to her political aspirations for 2016. Will this be the first indication of who the president and the Democratic Party may support in the upcoming bid for the presidential, for the Oval Office, which is only, it's less than 4 years away. So, on the screen is the S&P 500 E-mini futures from the homepage of CFRN.net. Click the red, white, and blue button that says click here now. Go to the next page. It will give you instructions. Click the green button. You'll be able to see the charts if you're not already seeing the charts. Let's recap the week real quickly from a big picture perspective, and then Michael will take it over and do the recap for today. Now, we took out 1,500 on the S&P cash yesterday, and we just took it out again. We took it out earlier today. We just took it out again. S&P 500 cash currently, right now, as we speak, is above 1,500. That's kind of a big deal. Big psychological number. Question is does the market have what it takes to hold it up? Okay. Keith, we will talk about Apple. We'll talk about why it's down, and is it down and out? Is it down for the count? We will talk about that later in the show. All right, here's the open Sunday night. Monday, holiday, we came down to the weekly trading zone at 77.78, rallied up to the zone at 83.84. The zones are pretty close together this week, and that has to do with the lack of volatility that we've seen in the markets. We came back down to the zone at 77.78 on Tuesday, put in a nice rally. Okay. As you recall, we had drawn a trend line here, and we said when that trend line breaks, we'll be interested in getting short. Brought us back to the zone. We put out a tweet, said consider being long at 1485. It was good for an initial 4-point move, then it came back and tested 1485 and handed over 6 points of opportunity. You've heard me say it before, I'll say it again, I'll keep saying it, I said it earlier this week, important prices are almost always tested, okay? 85, good, boom. 85, good, boom. All right? We then come back, we test the weekly zone at 83.84. Remember, over here, we just blew right up through it. And when that happened, I said, okay, guys, we just blew up through this thing, so we're going to come back and most probably spend some time consolidating at that zone. Well, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours this thing spent before it finally got up to the next zone. And we promptly said via a tweet and alert to the partners, get long 1487. That led to 9.75 points of opportunity. Price then came right back and tested. Look here, exactly, 1487. Ran up 6 points. Came back. Tested what? 1487, that's right. Now this time, we'd already had two beautiful back-to-back tests. I didn't want to press it too much, so I built a cushion into this. And you guys know that I do that, especially with the tweets a lot. So I threw this thing out at 91. I liked 87, but I said, you know what? Let's let the market show us that it's really going to, that it has the, it has it left in it, you know, the energy left to make another run. So instead of going with 87, I sent the tweet out last night, 91. Now, we had some stuff on the short side, too, in case the market chose to sell off. But it didn't. Remember, it's going to do one or two things. It's either going to rally or sell off. It'll go sideways for a little bit. But eventually, it's going to try to make a move. And that's all you need is for it to try to make a move. There's profit opportunity in the try, okay? Just got to be there. Got to be present. Got to take advantage of it. So, 91 ran up 6.5 points. Came back to where? Right there, 91. And put in this beautiful bounce. Originally, we had gone 4.5 points on the second attempt, but now we've gone up all the way to 96.75. So that would be 5.75 points so far on this attempt. Okay. 5.75 so far. Okay. Now, overhead, we have our final weekly trading zone, 1499/1500. The cash market's already broke 1500. The futures have not. We're waiting. Okay? Can they do it? The future, since the cash market has already done it and failed a couple times, there's a chance the futures won't see it. But it's a Friday, and the market has a very bullish tempo to it. So let's watch and see what happens throughout this radio program. Michael, take it away.
All right. I would be happy to grab it. I did not know that about the president only having one conversation with the
joint
the
interview.
Only conversation being with his
joint
wife.
Joint interview, yep.
That is interesting. All right.
Yes, Daryl, the tweet that went out said to consider being long above 1491. That is correct.
All right. Everyone should be looking at my charts. Yes, indeed.
It doesn't say, I didn't put long on the screen here, but the arrow shows the direction. Just go pull up the Twitter feed, twitter.com/CFRN. You'll be able to see them. All right, it's all yours.
All right. All right. I will grab it and run. Here we go. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Friday, January 25th, 2013. Let's go over the results from the live trading room to start with. Okay, we had the NQ nailed us again today. We're minus 16 ticks on the NQ. We were plus 9 ticks on natural gas. We were plus 18 ticks on crude oil and plus 1 tick on gold. All right. So far, for the 17 trading days in January, we are, excluding commissions, we are up $3,395 per contract in the live trading room. Okay. That's in the first 2 hours doing what we do. Yeah, we had a rough start today. Today, we started out with a losing trade on gold. We followed that up with a losing trade on the NASDAQ. Then we had a break-even trade, or maybe plus one tick, I think, on crude oil. Then we had another plus one tick on crude oil. Then we had a bigger win on crude. Then we got our gold back. Then we didn't end up getting the NASDAQ back. We took two NASDAQ trades, and we lost both of them. But I'll go through everything, all right? If you have not taken a trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Sign up for the free trial. In the free trial, you get access to our live trading room, our charts, our indicators. You get access to everything. You can download the charting platform and play with it yourself. You could even do it over the weekend if you wanted to. If you have taken the free trial with us and you want to become a partner, contact us somehow. You should have my phone number. Everybody that's ever taken a trial has been emailed my phone number at least once, if not several times. You can give us a call. You can email us at support@cfrn.net if you want to sign up, become a partner, and get into it all. Start making money consistently. All right. Let's start out with the crude oil. All right, the crude actually has a trading opportunity setting up right now. We have bullish divergence, and this is our trend line. Right now, if we test the BBC and give an up close, that's a spot you could go long on the crude. But let's blow it up, and we'll just cover what we actually did. All right, let's see. Right in here we had, and I'll bring up my picture. I'm not going to refer to my picture too many times, but I will refer to it a couple of times. All right, these are the rules. Step by step, you get a bullish cross of the MA1, which is this blue and red line, over the BBC, which is the green line. Okay, right here, step one. Price pulls away from it, like it did right here, step two. Price pulls back down, tests it, and gives an up close, which is step three. And step four, check to see that you have divergence. So we did all that, and we had an entry right here. We got long right there. It dropped down quite a bit, and then it took off. We ended up moving our stop up to break even when it had four or five ticks in it, and it had closed on the other side of the MA1. We moved our stop to break even. It came down. It just tapped us right here. It took us out, and then it went up about 10 ticks. it changed directions on us right after that. We didn't have any trades in there. We did trade right over here. The same thing again. Price came down, tested the BBC, gave an up close with bullish divergence. We got long there. Again, we moved our stop to break even after it closed up above the MA1. Came back down and stopped us out. The next trade that we took was over here. And we lost that one. That put us down, I think we're down 6 ticks after losing that trade. That was a close. Let me just show you the trade itself. All right. When it's got too much momentum, when the price has too much momentum to pull back and test the BBC, you just draw a trend line like this. And if you still have the divergence down here, you can take a close beneath the trend line. All right, the continuation, a down close beneath the trend line in this case, a continuation of the trend. It's confirmation of continuation of the trend. That one stopped us out. And I said, you know what, it stopped us out, but it looks like it's just pulling back up to the BBC. And that's exactly what it did. I said, once it gets up there to the BBC, as long as that black line is below the green line, when we get a down close below that trend line, I'm still going to go short. And I did. I shorted right there, and I made 19 ticks, I think, on that trade. Next one was right here. We shorted right there, and we took a couple more ticks. Now, at this point right here, when I executed this trade, it was 10:41 when I exited the trade. That was when we had finally made our 2 points for the morning. All right, I had told you guys yesterday, starting yesterday, I was going to start keeping track of how long it takes me to make 2 points in the morning. We started off with a couple of losing trades, so it took us a little longer to make our 2 points this morning. A couple more trades too. But right here at 10:41, we had our 2 points profit. All right, over here we had an opportunity we missed. Over here we had another opportunity that we took. You can see, again, it's the same thing over and over and over again. Okay, you're doing the same exact thing. It moved up. There was an opportunity here, here, and here that you could have taken. And then we got into the close of the morning session. I didn't trade anything in here after this. This was my final trade. All right, so we ended with the crude oil plus 18 ticks on the morning. Okay. The next market over is the Russell. Okay, let's look at the Russell really quickly. And the Russell didn't have a lot of opportunity this morning. Had some pre-market, but once the markets actually opened up, there was this shorting opportunity right here. That only went about 6 or 7 ticks before it turned around. We really didn't have anything in here. Okay, we were looking for an opportunity, but there was really just a mess in here. You probably could have shorted. Yeah, you could have shorted right there, the down close on that. That didn't go anywhere. That would have turned around and stopped you out. Let's see. Over here, it was going into the weekly trading zone. So even though it would have worked out, you probably wouldn't have wanted to do it. It was 99. Well, you had 10 ticks down to the zone. So right here, you could have shorted right there down to the weekly trading zone. Then it changed directions. Right here, it tested the BBC with an up close, bullish divergence, and a blue cycle. So you just need the up close. You could have gotten long right in there, and I highlighted that in the live trading room. That one worked out really well. Okay. That was it on the Russell. I didn't have a Russell Dom up, so I didn't take a single Russell trade this morning. Now we'll go to the gold. Okay. If anybody has any questions, just type them in here, and I will I'll be happy to answer them for you. Okay. Here we go. Gold. Now, we took a few trades. 1, 2, 3, 4 trades on gold, and we ended up with plus 1 tick. Our first trade on gold was over here. It was a close above the trend line with the bullish divergence. It stopped us out pretty much immediately. Gold had just changed directions. Came down here, and I missed this one. This was a nice trade opportunity right here. If I had taken that, we would have been even on the gold. But I missed it. And then I missed over here, too. When we finally had the bullish divergence, it was an opportunity to enter here and here. Both of those would have given you some profit. I finally did grab a short over here once we closed down. Price moved down below the BBC right here. It moved down below the BBC, came back up, tested the BBC, gave a down close with the bearish divergence. Now I'll bring my picture over again. You see, it's the same exact setup. This is a different market than what the picture was done on, but it's the same exact setup, same indicators, same everything, over and over and over and over again. Here's the picture for you all. Okay? I use an 8-tick stop on every single trade. In this particular case, we got short right in there on that down this down close right here. And we took 9 ticks profit on the trade. That brought us back to break even. We had, let's see, right over here, a trade that we missed, tested the BBC with a down close. Over here, and this is where the black line comes into play, Mike. Over here, price, we're looking to short, and as price was moving up, we were looking for a down close below the trend line. Once we got the down close below the trend line, the black line here was right on top of the green line. You want the black line and the MA1 to be on the proper side of the BBC that you're trading. If you're going short, you want it to be below. If you're going long, you want it to be above. If it's mixed up in between, like right over here, you don't want to be trading right there. Although, I mean, this one worked out just fine, but that's one of those places where you just don't want to trade. It's likely to be flattening out and possibly changing directions. Okay. Now, the next opportunity was right in here. We didn't take this. It only gave a few ticks. You probably, if you didn't move your stop to break even like I always do when you get, when you get 4 or 5 ticks in the trade, or it gets on the other side of the MA1, or it hits the prior swing, then you may have been stopped out on this. I don't remember. It was 58.4, and it drew down to 57.5, so you would have been stopped out on that, okay, if you didn't move your stop to break even. There was an opportunity right here to get it back and there to make some profit, here to make some profit. I actually made a few ticks on this one. This was the close above the trend line, okay? And once it moved up here to the prior swing high, I had locked in a little bit of profit on it, and I took a few ticks profit. Over here on this one, this was right at the end of the morning session, right in here. It was right at the end of the morning session, and I was short on that and short on the natural gas at the same time. The natural gas started to move, so I had to manage the natural gas. So I moved my stops to break even on this and the natural gas at the same time, and this one stopped me out at break even and went down. And when I get to the natural gas, you see what happened there. But let's see, that's 10, 80, 90, 200 actually. Anyway, this one ended up moving down just fine. When it changed directions over here, you didn't have any opportunity in there. The only place you had some opportunity right here, you had a little bearish divergence, just a little bit right here. So the down close is something you could have shorted right there. This is during the break, but right here there was another one right here. There was no divergence to speak of there. In here you do have some divergence, so you could have shorted this down close right here, but you can see it's pulling back up to the BBC. Now, when you get into a trade like this one, we'll say, what you anticipate when you have divergence like this, the entry is over here. You know, the divergence is building at the time. It's still spreading. The green line's still moving away from the cycle. When you get into the trade, you're anticipating that the green line is going to turn around and work its way down into the cycle. All right? Just like that. Work its way down into the cycle. Whenever you have divergence, that's what you're anticipating. Okay? That the green line is going to turn around and work its way into the cycle. All right? And that was it for gold. Okay, so now we will jump over here onto the NASDAQ, my nemesis, again. There were a bunch of great trades on the NASDAQ this morning. I only took 3 trades, and 2 of them lost. This was my first trade here of the morning. I had forgotten I even took that, but this was my first trade in the morning. And I had moved my stop to break even after it closed down below the MA1. And I took it over here on the down close below the trend line. And I ended up taking a break even on that. Price turned around and started moving up, but at the time I had this chart covered up by a gold chart, so I missed all of this. There was an opportunity right here to get in and take some profit, another opportunity here to get in and take some profit. Just looking through it right here, there was no divergence. Right here, there was an opportunity to get in and take some profit. I finally got in over here, and it stopped me out right away. I missed this one right here. Now, and this, if we go back to the picture, I'll just walk through it instead of showing the picture again. Step 1 is the cross. Step 2 is the pull away. Step 3 is the test of the BBC with a down close. Step 4, you look down here for the divergence. Okay? Over and over and over again. Same thing every single market. So the down close right there is the spot to short that. I missed it. It went down. There was another one right over here. Same thing. And right here. And in here was a continuation trade on this big move down right here. I missed all this too. The NASDAQ, the last 2 days, the NASDAQ has been the market that I've been down on. I mean, it doesn't bother me so much because NASDAQ's $5 a tick. So even though I was down, I think yesterday I was down 18 ticks and today I was down 16 ticks. Let me just check and I'll tell you exactly what it was. Yesterday I was down 15 ticks and today I was down 16 ticks. That's what it was. It's not a significant amount, really, of money. And it's easy to make up with the other markets. You know, like the one trade I did on the natural gas made up for all my loss here on the NASDAQ in that single trade. Okay. Anyway, we had a down close right here, and it kept dropping down. Another one over here, the close down below this trend line. I actually would have had to have redrawn that trend line. The close down below that trend line was a spot you could have considered shorting, except for the fact that the green line was already into the cycle, so there would have been nothing going on there. All right. I did take, right at the end of the morning session, I took another short trade here on the NASDAQ, and it stopped me out pretty much to the tick, and then it dropped like it should. Okay. It is what it is. You take the stop outs when they come, and having a stop is actually a good thing for me. For everyone, actually. Having a stop gives you control. And the more control you have in the market, I mean, that's why I use range bars, because you have more information and more control. The more control you have over what you're doing in the market, the more likely you are to be profitable. Okay? And we try to set it up so you have the most control that you can have, given what the markets are. You have no control over what the markets are going to do, but you have control over the way that you react to the market. All right. The soybeans, I didn't take a single trade in soybeans, but you can see in here there were a bunch of them. Could have gotten long right here. Pete mentioned this to me earlier on, but I missed it. And I don't even know if I have a soybean dom up right now. I do have one up, but I didn't take any soybean trades in here and here and here and here and here. Those are all valid trades on the soybeans. On the short side, right in here, you could have shorted right there on the soybeans and shorted right over here on the soybeans. And they did, they did really well all morning. Now that I'm looking at it, I'm wishing I would have traded the soybeans, but I didn't. These spots where I'm circling right here are spots where you would have entered, okay? There's two Kyles. There's always at least another one, Kyle, just so you know. There's always at least one more. And that was the soybeans, okay? On the ES, today was an odd day on the ES. We had two opportunities. There was this one right here that went down pretty well, and this one right in here that went down about a point, okay? At the end of the morning session, there was more opportunity on the ES. I hadn't really noticed it, but right in here, you could have gotten long. The bullish cross, the space, pullback, test, up close, bullish divergence. Okay, the same thing works over here on the ES, again and again and again. Okay, now over here, natural gas. We took one trade on natural gas. We tried to enter this one, but we didn't get filled, and then it turned around and it started to drop. And we entered here on the close below this trend line. Oops, on the close below that trend line, we entered right there. And it was a nice shorting opportunity right there, okay? Nice shorting opportunity. And we took 9 ticks profit on that one. That's it, guys. That is it. So on the morning, we were plus $90 a contract on natural gas, minus $80 a contract on the NQ, plus $180 a contract on crude oil, and plus $10 a contract on gold, all excluding commissions. I think that comes up to plus 200, which is equivalent to 4 points on the ES. And as I said earlier, that puts us at plus $3,395 a contract for these 17 trading days of January. Okay, if anybody has any questions, you can email us at support@cfrn.net. You can call us. You can call Bert and Leslie. Bert and Leslie's number is 1-866-928-3310. That's 866-928-3310. And that's it, guys. I'm going to wrap it up here. I hope you all have a great weekend, and for everybody who is out there right now, who I've been talking to over the past couple days, and just give me a call when you get a chance, okay? And Daryl will, I'll send you off something. Daryl will give you information about all this if you want, okay? And that's it, guys. Going to wrap it up.
All righty. Thank you very much, Mike. So,
all right,
once again, what was the final tally for this morning for the live trading room?
We were plus $200 a contract.
Very good. And yesterday was a good day. There was 10 points yesterday. I apologize, guys, that I was out yesterday. One of those things just couldn't be helped. But we're back today, and we're going to head out to Las Vegas, Nevada right now. Talk to David Williams from PageTrader.com, and a reminder, we'll be back at 3 p.m. Eastern with Robin Dane, the trading coach for this week's Coach's Corner. She told me earlier in the week what today's topic was going to be. I think it was dollar threshold. Don't hold me to that. She'll probably send me an email here in a little bit, and I'll let you know for sure what the topic is. But it's about 30 minutes. She will talk to us for about 15 minutes about some of the psychology behind trading, what goes on between your ears, you know, while price is doing its thing on the screen. And then she'll open the floor for discussion, for questions, and you may have a question about the topic she's covering today, or you may have a different question. Maybe you've written some books about the psychology of trading, or been to some websites, and maybe you just have some more generalized type of questions. She'll be happy to answer those questions for you, okay? So that's 3 p.m. Eastern, and you don't have to go anywhere or sign up or log in. When the radio show ends today, all you have to do is leave this room open, okay? I'll kick the radio server back on. So leave this room open. And at 3 o'clock, we'll appear right out of the ether. It'll be magical. But you won't see it unless you're here, so I hope you'll be here. All right? With that said, I've still got the issue with this repeat. So let me see if I can fix it. Don't touch your radio dial.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Morning, Dwayne.
David, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. And thank you, and welcome everybody out there, and good morning, Michael, as well.
Good morning, David.
Well, Michael and I took care of the business yesterday, Dwayne, of running the program, and
I heard you guys did a fine job. That's what I heard.
We ran through the markets quickly, and it was a little upsetting to me, and I did have to get some professional counseling right afterwards, immediately, because I wasn't able to get into my big flow. But the fact is that pulled it off pretty good. What's that?
I said he's not kidding, guys.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. I really did. No, it's we had a nice time, and I hope all your things got taken care of, and that your, you know, the stuff you had to take care of got handled nicely.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So, David, we broke 1500 on the S&P 500 cash yesterday.
Yeah. You know, they're pushing this thing up. They want to go higher. The thing isn't done yet. So, they're trying to move it up. And, you know, it's funny, that whole discussion about, you've heard it before, and I'm sure the audience has as well, but which one is the dad? Is cash the father of the futures? Or, you know, which one leads which one? And I think the consensus is that cash is really the leader, in the sense that the real trading in the real product occurs in the cash market.
Yeah, I agree.
The product being the stocks, yeah. So people are buying and selling stocks because that's more real. This is really the consensus. When people are buying stocks and selling stocks and paying attention to companies and, you know, their earnings and all this stuff, that market, that transaction is much more important than us, the people who are buying and selling the futures, which is a different beast entirely. You know, the futures market is a market that it's not, in some ways, and, you know, we have to take this with a grain of salt, but it's not quite as real as the stock market itself. So the cash S&P, of course, represents 500 individual stocks actually being traded. The stocks are changing hands. I'd like to buy 600 shares. I'd like to buy 300 shares. I'd like to sell 1,000 shares. And real transactions are taking place. It certainly is a real transaction in the futures market as well. But because of the nature of futures trading and the fact that futures contracts expire, they don't last forever, whereas a stock certificate will last forever or until the stock goes to zero and goes out of business. It doesn't have a quarterly turnover every 3 months and so on. So the stock market's considered more real. The cash market's considered more real. And there's many systems that treat the idea that the cash market is more real, and therefore the difference between cash and futures has meaning, that the spread between the two shows something to the technical trader or to the fundamentalist who wants to lean a little bit on that study. The study of the difference between cash and futures. And as we sit right now, the futures market is at a discount to the cash market. Futures market is below $1,500.42, where the cash is, and is trading at $1,495.75. So that would have meaning. Now, what you do with that information, how you use it, is up to you. And there's many methods that treat the idea about the difference between stocks trading, you know, the cash market and the futures. And it might not be a bad idea for you to, you being anybody, to take a look at what that is and how those ideas work, because a number of ideas came from that, the fair market value, there's many, many things that have come out of the difference between cash and futures. It's probably a good idea to know some of them. I have looked at that, and I do keep an eye on that from time to time, just to see where it's all trading. Each person can figure out for themselves what part of that information might be useful to you. And I assure you, there's probably some good information in that information that might be of use to you, just like there is in volume and in many other things. Do you use that at all, Dwayne or Michael?
The S&P cash, I think it's when you hear, anytime you're watching any financial show, or even just the evening news, but even with CNBC, when they show a quote on their screen, they're quoting the cash market. And when you hear people talk about things like the Golden Cross and the Death Cross, like the S&P right now is at 1,500.33, up 5.51 on the day. That's the cash quote. That's kind of what the world is looking at. And when you hear things about, the S&P hit its 200-day moving average, almost always, unless you're on some future-specific show like this, they're going to be referring to that cash price. And I do agree with you, David, that it is the force that drives the market that has everyone's attention. Now, if you get down under the hood, who's really running the show? Boy, you could probably argue that real good both ways. But on the surface, to the world, I think it's just accepted that. And so do we use it with – not really. I mean, we're like aware of it, like today, knowing that it broke 1,500 or broke it yesterday. And then here's a really good example. Yesterday, once the cash market broke 1,500, it sold off pretty quickly and pretty sharply. Now, if you were sitting here just watching the futures chart and you're going, man, 1,500, ooh, that's a really big round number. And so as soon as we hit 1,500, I'm going to sell that thing, man, because there should be some resistance there. I'm just making stuff up, but I'm saying let's say that was your way of thinking. Well, you got left at the altar. You got disappointed because it sold off without you, and you might be scratching your head. Well, gosh, how come it didn't make it to 1,500? Well, go look at the cash market, and it did. That very thing you were looking for to happen here in the futures did play out perfectly in the cash market. So, yeah, I don't know that there's a right answer. There's probably a lot of people that could speak very eloquently and argument on both sides of that. I would just recommend that everyone always be aware. Like if the Dow is hitting a big, you know, psychological level in the cash market, like the 1,300 number, 13,000, 1,500 big here in the S&P, 13,000 recently big in the Dow. Be aware of those numbers. How much is that going to affect your intraday trades? I don't know that it is. What are your thoughts, David? Do you use it at all?
And Michael,
you didn't have a chance to weigh in yet, so I'd like to get your take on it too.
Go ahead,
David.
I do look at the cash market. There was a time where I was doing quite a bit with the cash market because at one point I was impressed with the idea that these are what we just said, but that these are really stocks that are actually trading. And I've always felt, to be honest, I've always had this feeling that what I'm doing in the futures market is somehow frivolous or less meaningful than people who buy stocks. I wonder if other people have ever had that feeling that, you know, I'm doing this weird thing called futures trading that doesn't really mean a whole lot. And yeah, you can make money from it, but it's kind of weird and it's not like somebody buying and doing something important and real like buying a stock. So I went through that and I was watching cash for a while. I don't use it a lot now, but you can, of course, forecast on cash its own self. You know, you don't have to try to tie the two together. You can make your own independent forecast on cash. And if you were to do that, like as an example in our work, if we were to do a roadmap on cash, and cash said, and the roadmap said that cash needed to go to such and such a number by such and such a date, that information actually could be very useful to me in looking at the futures market, which itself would have its own roadmap. And the difference between those two numbers could have some meaning. That could actually throw an extra piece of confidence in the trade. And that's really what we're all looking for, is something that we can be confident in. You know, if we're all really honest, what we really just want to do is we want to be able to sit down in front of these screens and we want to be able to find something that we can believe in and something that has reality to it, that there's something real there that has meaning and has good high probability to it, and that we want to be able to trade that and either make our money for the day, if that's the time frame that you're thinking from, or longer term, which I tend to be a little bit more longer term in my expectations for the month and so on. So that's really all we're looking for, and all these things, including the cash market and what its meaning is and how it applies to the futures, the difference between the two. Futures sometimes trades way above cash. Sometimes future trades at cash or way below cash. I've seen days where cash and futures are completely on different sides of the page at the start of the day, at the end of the day. It starts out, futures are at a great discount to cash, and at the end of the day, futures are way above cash. So, and futures is an expectation market. It's a market that's very filled with the kind of trading that is laced with expectations. So is the stock market, but it's fundamentally different. The futures market has a very different feel and a very different kind of movement and things that it does. If you take a look at the cash market and the futures and lay it against each other. So I do use it, but I don't use it really for forecasting, but I do keep an eye on the cash market to see where they are. And quite often, they're around the same level. I mean, until things get really volatile, they tend to stay Like as an example, today when you mentioned the cash being from yesterday having been up there, it actually surprised me a little bit that we were still above, I hadn't looked at it today, the futures, that cash is still trading at a premium to the futures right now. So I take that in and I scratch my head and I think about it, you know, a little bit. But all I'm really doing in all of my stuff, and I think everybody is we're just looking for some extra pieces that we can put together to help build the confidence that we have something real, something that is likely to happen, and a target, or if we're trend following, you know, some method to know that we can hold on to a position for a period of time. And go ahead, Michael, if you wanted to throw anything in there on the idea of trading in cash, not trading in cash, but watching the cash market.
Honestly, I don't watch the cash market at all. I am totally focused on what's in front of me. And
do you have any cash in your pocket? I mean, just, you know, like
Yeah, there's a little cash in my pocket. But
okay, so you're keeping the cash market in your mind a little bit.
Yeah,
we all do.
Yeah. No, I just trade what's in front of me. That's I try not to be swayed by other things, like fundamental things.
I think you have $35 in your pocket right now.
You think?
Would you be honest with me and tell me? Let's check it out. Let's see what you got. Just read the actual amount. I want to hear it.
I think I have $86 in my pocket.
Okay. Gosh, see. That just goes to show you can't forecast everything. You know, some things are just out of the realm, you know.
That was close, though. Yeah.
Okay, well, it's $50 off. Come on.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. It was in the area.
What do I have in my pocket?
I'm guessing I'll tell you the truth. I'm guessing you have. It's early in the morning there, Friday.
Yeah, it's not.
I'm guessing you probably have $43.
Okay, well, I'm counting it right now. There's 80. There's 81. Hold on. 82, 83, 84. Here's a 5. That's 89. 90, 1, 2. $92.
92.
Look at Michael. We have more in common than you ever thought because we both carry about the same amount of cash in our pocket in the morning.
In the morning.
So is this what later it's a lot less.
Is this what people tune in for? Is this the part that they...
This is what they're tuning in for, Dwayne. I don't know. You have to stay up with the times, man. This is where the shows come to. Okay? We guess what we're carrying around in our pockets.
I got $11, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, you know, you're
there's some change in there, though. I don't want to count the change. I got some breath mints, too.
Good.
I got 3 sets of keys. They say that's an important man has a lot of keys, but the janitor at a school has a lot of keys too, so.
You know, I have a decent number of keys, and I have literally forgotten what most of them are for.
I know.
That's a really bad position to be in. And at one point, I'm going to have to sit down and take a look at all those keys, because when you bring out that many keys, people say, what? You know, what is all that? How many things do you have? Is it a bunch of lockers at airports? What is this? And my answer now is, I don't know anymore.
Do you have one of those little things that attaches to your belt that you can pull it out on, like, the little string?
No, Dwayne, that's something that you would wear, not me. No, I put it all in my pocket.
I just got an email from Mike Reed. He's listening to us talk about the cash index. He says, Dwayne, what David said about the S&P, the cash S&P being made up of real transactions and various stocks being the leader and being more meaningful, more important than futures, lends credence to the relevance of my indicators made up of the stocks traded in that index.
Ooh,
like
good point.
Getting down under the hood, like I think I heard you say. Anyway, just a plug for using the internals as another old-fashioned, long-forgotten technical analysis, a great way to judge the market's strength or weakness, looking at the makeup of the actual cash index.
From okay, so this is what we should do.
Technical analysis guy.
Right. Listen, next time Mike Reed is on, we should have him talk about that because we'll get to the markets here, but I really like the idea that, you know, here's somebody who really does have a methodology that is based upon those items and looking, as he says, under the hood, or Dwayne said, under the hood, using the cash market. And it might be interesting to the listeners. I would certainly be interested to see what he's doing with it, and it would make for some good radio and makes the radio show seem really, really long. So that would be good. No, it would be nice to have him on. Maybe on Monday, if he's available, Mike, we can have him on.
I mean, you know, when you...
Or Mike.
As you said.
I mean, yeah, whenever Mike I'm talking about, he shows up when he can, really. Okay, he's welcome.
As you said earlier, when you look at the cash index, you're looking at the actual companies and you're looking at the transactions. This is what Mike is referencing in his email. When he's looking at the internals of the individual stocks that make up the index, okay, a stock certificate is, yes, a piece of paper, but it does represent fractional ownership in that particular company, whatever it is, Caterpillar, Apple, IBM, doesn't matter. That's what a stock certificate represents, fractional ownership in the company. Whereas the futures contract, we could take up a lot of time trying to explain the concept of a futures contract, but you brought this up too, David, that the stock in a company like Apple, I don't know what their float is, I don't know what their outstanding share count is, I don't know what the authorized is, but there's a finite supply of shares in Apple Computer. There's a finite number of, there's supposed to be a finite number of shares available for any company. Their board has decided we're going to issue X amount of shares, and that's all that you should see traded in the marketplace. Now, we know that because the SEC hasn't done a great job of policing the marketplace, there were times when Overstock.com would have volume two and three times the daily volume of all their authorized and outstanding shares. So are there fake shares being traded in the marketplace? There are. Shares that don't really exist. People are shorting stocks and their brokers are not actually borrowing to cover. There's some very faulty record keeping out there. But that aside, let's just forget that whole thing's going on. By looking at the cash index, you are getting a more realistic view of where the market is. That said, we're only a few points off. We're at 14.95 mm-hmm. and a quarter versus, I think, the number will come by here again in a minute, 1,500.04.
Yeah, but the interesting thing, you're right, and here's the interesting thing to me, Dwayne, is that the cash is trading at a premium to the futures today. The futures have been very bullish. The futures have been very active, bullish, staying above important levels and so on, and yet cash is still trading at a premium to it. That, to me, is somewhat interesting given everything you just said and we've talked about here. And I would like to call up my broker at some point and just say, I'd like to go long 200 fake IVMs. Okay, let me get that in the market for you, the fake ones. You can just order those.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not quite that easy.
Market. Yeah, I'm long 200 of the IBMs in the fake market. Yeah.
But you can go out. There are stocks out there today, guys. You can go, and I can, if you want, I can dig some of them up for you, that today they will trade in volume today more shares than they have authorized. Let's say they have 50 million shares authorized. Well, they'll trade 75 million. They'll trade 100. Some of them will trade 200 million. And so you go to the SEC and you go, how's this possible? And they go, we'll have to look into that. I mean, this has been going on for years.
Yeah, isn't it possible, though, that man A has 1,000 shares and he trades five times? He's traded 5,000 shares. So couldn't the float be 50 million and people have bought and sold many times in that day, and that makes the difference up between 50 and 75 million?
Yeah, but when a company has 100 million shares and a billion shares get traded, it's kind of hard to argue that. I mean, what you're saying, fundamentally, it could be true, okay? But there isn't the data to support that in a lot of these cases. And so, I mean, this is Patrick Byrne, CEO of Overstock, he's been before Congress and says, hey, can you explain to me how this is possible? And Congress has shook their head and said, no, we can't.
They were asking about that point, though, about that there's so many more being traded than actually exist. Mm-hmm. That was the point they were asking.
Mm-hmm. Now, he was asking
them. Okay, interesting. Okay. Well, that's interesting. I do know that that would have to make up some of the difference, because just the people that I know that trade, they may trade, you know, in stocks. Not everybody trades multiple times in a day. They might just trade once. But if you're trading in some size and you're getting in and out of the market, and there's thousands of people doing that, that will add up to millions and millions of shares.
But for the entire float of a company to be churned in one day, that's pretty unrealistic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know.
The equivalent of every outstanding share in that company being traded multiple times in one day, that's not realistic. It's just not. I mean, you won't see that happening in IBM. You won't see that happen in Apple. But stocks that have come under fire from people who think naked shorting is a good way to do business, like Overstock.com, you will see that happen. And that prevents, mm-hmm. the share price from climbing. This is a whole other radio show and a whole other argument. We spent years dealing with this, and they still haven't cleaned it up. They still have not cleaned it up. So that's one of the reasons that we trade futures now instead of equities, because it's purely electronic, and none of those shenanigans go on. I'm not saying you can't still trade equities, you can't still make money, that there isn't, but there's a very shady and dark side to that business, and you have to stay away from companies that are under attack. You just do. And you never know when the company that you're in is going to come under attack. Now, this attack that Herbalife came under, that was a very open attack, and there was no naked shorting involved there. This guy just began to legitimately short the stock. He's probably a little sorry that he did, because now he's even got Carl Icahn ticked off. And
you don't want to get him mad.
You really don't. He's not a good guy to be in a street fight with. He tends to win. John asks, if cash is above futures, does that mean that the net stock buyers are more optimistic than the net futures buyers?
Yes, that's exactly what it means. There's probably no other way to interpret that. The futures market is an anticipatory market. The cash market, by trading and actually, there's math to that index for them to be higher. And someone else can chime in on this, but I believe that's exactly what it means. I believe that's exactly what it means, that the people buying stocks are more optimistic than the people as a whole buying the futures. For the stock index, the whole index, to be higher by 5 points, people are more excited. Or you could also flip it around the other way and simply say that the people that are trading the futures market aren't as excited or are bullish as the people that are trading in the actual market. And you'll see this, that the cash gets ahead of, trades at what they call a premium or trades at a deficit to the futures. I was a little surprised this morning, given everything that's happened, when Dwayne started talking about this and I flipped it up and I looked at it to see that the futures were actually trading below the cash. That caught me by surprise today. So, that's exactly what it means. The optimism in the actual market is higher than it is in the futures market. So there you are. And I would like to have Mike Reed come on Monday or today or anytime he wants to or can, to talk a little bit, if he's willing to, about the idea that he presented, that he's mentioned this before, his particular methodology, which he likes to say is old-fashioned, but it has stood the test of time, and it still is a very, very workable technique. Otherwise, he wouldn't be using it. And some of these things that go back a long, long way. As an example, trend lines, which we've talked about so many times on the program. I'm not a big trend line drawer. If you looked at my charts, you wouldn't see a lot of trend lines. But it is really a wonderful method for putting together ideas about what you want to do and when you want to do them. There's no two ways about it. You can't discount it, and it's been around since day one. And here it is still, and it is still a very, very leading edge kind of technique, even though it sounds so simple and it seems simple. It doesn't have to be complicated. There's a saying out there, trading can be complicated, but it doesn't have to be simple. Something like that.
Trading's not easy, but it can be simplified.
Yeah. And that was today.
Just poking fun at you there.
It's a perfect example of that.
Anyway, okay, so let's get, if you want, Dwayne, we'll scoot along right into the markets. Here we are up at against the weekend. You know, we have a lot of potential news that's going to continue to come out. Our overall viewpoint here at PageTrader for the year is that we're going to have a pretty volatile year in a number of markets. It wouldn't be hard to say that about necessarily any year, but last year for the S&P, in spite of the fact that it did move up and completed important targets and so on, intraday it has been very quiet, very much like you see now, and we are kind of in the dead zone right now for the day, you know, where you have a quiet period. But the S&P is not the market it used to be, and I'm hoping, looking forward to the bigger kinds of swings in this year that we have seen before that will trigger perhaps many weeks or even months of much more range and swing trading behavior intraday that we have not seen for quite some time in the S&P. And so that you know that, and I know that everybody knows this, we don't have to put all of our eggs in one basket and just trade the S&P. There's so many other excellent markets that have really good setups, and one of which I'd like to jump into rather than the S&P right away, Dwayne, if you're ready for me to, I'd like to talk a little bit about the gosh darn euro.
Okay.
Okay, and if you don't mind, I'm going to switch this over to our chart over here just for a quick minute.
Yeah, you bet. You ready? Yeah, let me know when you're ready, and I'll send it your way.
You send it now, and I'll click it over here.
Okay.
What I'm showing you here is just, in our work, the last number of three or four turning points in this euro on the daily chart. So this is the March euro contract. I think March is the correct month. And as we talked about a few days ago, we were looking for the potential for a bottom in the euro on January 22nd. So putting these other ones aside, this 22nd one, we put out a roadmap the other day yesterday for a trade to get long on an hourly close above, I forgot exactly what the number, but it's like 133.65 or 133.66 or something like that, somewhere in this range. And when they do that, we're looking at a daily chart now, go long for an advance to 134.19 and then hold a remainder for a trend following exit. So we did have, if I switch over to the hourly chart, we did have an hourly close above, I'm trying to find where we are here, but let's see. I think this was it right here. This hourly close is 133.78, got us long. We had to then, it moved a little higher, but we had to sit for about a 20 tick pullback here, and then the market continued up and is trading very nicely and very high up here. This is probably, I can't quite see the number, but we're trading right now at 134.62. So we're practically a full dollar, 100 pips higher than where we got in. And this is the aggressive part of the trade. This is the part where we've already gotten out of the main body of the trade, and we felt that the position would continue or had a high probability of continuing higher than 134.18, and it did. And I'll show you where 134.18 is. That's about right here. And they got through that. They kind of sat on that area, you know, if you drew a line for 134.18, and then they continued up. So we're going to continue to hold this, and what's interesting about this, and I want to encourage people, if you like the overnight and longer term, if this advance continues and we're able to see the 135, notice today's high is 134.85. If we get above 135, that actually sets up a very powerful secondary roadmap for this market, for the euro. So that might be something that you would want to take a trade in. It would be a multi-day, multi-unit of time deal. So, you can come to pagetrader.com and take a look at that and see, especially if the market gets up next week to the 135 level or higher. That will prompt an exit of our aggressive position and then potentially a setup for another very important trade that, although I can't get all the details right here, it would give us, you know, a big directional move. And I can't tell you which way it is, but I can tell you that it's pretty good. And so you might want to check it out. So let's watch this market into – Duane, do you have that control back there?
No? I got it.
Okay.
See, is it showing up?
Looks like we're seeing black here.
Oh, we have black screen. All right, let me close a browser window. I think.
Did I give that back to you correctly, or did I
– No, you didn't do anything wrong. Hang on.
Because there's two of you in here. There's two Duane Reeves.
No, I got it back. I just need to close all my browser windows. That usually clears it up. And there we go.
Okay, so you're back on. So we'll keep an eye on that. Remember that level, the 135 level, if we get higher up to 135.20 or something like that, that actually is the first step for setting up this next trade in the euro. And I hope we can... we'll continue to talk about it. If you want, we'll switch right into the S&P here. I don't have anything new to add to the S&P 500 that we haven't said all week and all month and for the last several months. We're looking for the higher prices. We've talked about the market getting into and above 1,500. We don't think there's, for longer term, we don't want to be shorting the market until we get into that area because we think that is the first tumbler to click over to set up the bigger move on the downside, which will be a multi-year decline. So that type of a trade should produce really big volatility in the market. You know how the downside is faster than the upside in most cases. The fastest move I've ever seen in 23 years in trading was a move up, not a move down. But talking about in the S&P, but having said that, in general, the down moves are faster than the up moves. So that down power brings in the volatility and so on, and we should see some really good trading once this gets completed. So as we sit here, it's been very quiet. We did get a nice trade ourselves this morning out of the S&P on a two lot. We got about 5 points out of it. We shorted it up at 96.75 this morning and bought it back around 92 or so, and the market bottomed at 90.75, which is against the 91 level, which is listed in our support and resistance panel. It will be interesting to see today, given where cash is and comfortably trading, I might add, it will be interesting to see if the futures market is able to get up there, because we're trading at 1,581 or so right now in cash. We're still above 1,500, and it'll be interesting to see if the futures market can match that or somehow climb up and take hold of the 1,500 level. We came close the other day. We didn't quite get there. So that's basically it on the S&P. Our outlook is the same. Market should go higher, but if you want a warning signal, let's let them get into the 1,500s on the upside and let that be the earliest warning signal for the longer-term positions to start being considered. Don't do it now. We've been saying this for months. Just let them go up there and make their best attempt at getting there. So that's our outlook for the S&P.
Do you have any particular inclination as to whether or not we will see? So we've got this upper zone here. This is our highest weekly trading zone, 99,1500. What do you think? You think we challenge this area if we look across here?
You know, I tell you what I'd like. I would like to see them. Maybe that's a better way for me to put it, because the market's so quiet here and they're very comfortable, complacent is a dangerous word in the market because it sounds like complacency leads to death. But complacency also happens in the middle of very powerful trends, and the market's just very comfortably trading there. And you have to kind of be able to identify the fact that, you know, complacency is often a normal thing inside of a trend that has not completed yet. I think that's exactly what we have in the S&P, a trend that is not completed yet. So my answer would be I would like to see. It would be really more than anything just kind of exciting to see the S&P get up and complete the 1,500 and start to move into that territory. And this would make the next couple of weeks very, very interesting, because that's, you know, like you were saying before, that's a big round number. It has a lot of meaning. And a lot of professional traders, if you've read the trading books, a lot of professional traders lean on those numbers. They actually think in terms of, well, there's a big round number here, and the market likes to go to big round numbers. That's a little too general for my style of trading. I need a little bit more than that. I'm sure they have more than that. But a lot of people do rely on that idea that there's a big round number sitting somewhere. And if they have nothing else going, and maybe they get a trade going based on some methodology of theirs to get in, if they have no other target going, sometimes they just rely on the round number theory, which is that the market wants to go to these round numbers. It's a little bit difficult for me to trade that way specifically, but it probably is not a bad backdrop to these to more specific, localized ideas of what the market's going to do. So, and remember, you don't have to know what the market's going to do. What you can do is just trend follow the market. And that has its own tremendous rewards if you can do it well. It also has probably the most difficult psychology of, at least in my opinion, of any of the trading methodologies out there. And so the people that are the really good trend followers, they really do earn their money, and they earn it in ways that could be considered torture, outright torture, to many of us traders. Maybe that's how we should take care of Al-Qaeda. Open some futures trading accounts and make them all trend followers. How's that? That'd kill them, wouldn't it? Man, they'd hate that. And man, we won't bother you again, man. We'll stay in our own country, man. We don't care. Just don't make me do that trend following stuff anymore, man. That really did something to me. All right, I'll go on. Anything you want to throw in on that, Dwayne?
No. This last night, it just went, this 87 was really a critical number here. It was a weekly zone for us. We had a tweet for 87. It came back, did 87 again. It came back, it did 87 again. But last night, I put that cushion in there just to see if this thing really had any oomph to it. So instead of going with 87 again, we bumped it up to 91 and says, let's see if it could really show us it's got something. If it can break 91, then that's the signal it's going to make a run at this 99-1500 again. So it did, and then it came back, tested that thing again, and now we're right back up here. We're just off the highs of the day. We're just off the highs of the... This is the... Right here, guys, as far as the futures go, let's just call it the market, because they're so close, and we've had this big discussion about cash and futures. The market, let's just call it the market for now. The market is at five-year highs. That's a big thing. There should have been a sound effect or a cymbal clashing or drum drumming or Beyonce lip syncing something. There should have been something. That's what it was. It was her lip syncing. We couldn't hear it.
You're the one.
Go ahead. Go ahead, caller.
Okay, this isn't a live chart we're looking at on your screen here, is it? This is a picture, or no?
No, it's a live chart.
How come, I just was wondering why your last bar is not moving at all?
Have you disconnected?
It just went down to 1495.50. It was at 1495.75.
But isn't, I'm looking at the top of that bar, of the body of that last bar, it seems like that would be...
Right here.
I mean, we're at 95.50,
yeah.
And it's showing 96.50 on the right-hand side, and I'm just wondering, that's not moving at all. I don't see it moving at all. That's what made me think it was a picture.
Oh.
Do you see it moving?
Well, yeah, it's moving on my chart, but it's not... I'm looking over now on my monitor. It's not moving on the monitor. It's moving on my chart, but...
Okay.
Let me close this browser window again. I thought I could safely open my browser window again. Hang on, let me close it. Let's see. Yeah, there we go. Now it's moving again.
Yeah. There you go. Okay,
something
there you go.
Something about that Google Chrome. You know, my wife started having troubles with her Google Chrome, and now I'm having intermittent issues with... And I really like Chrome, but I may have to just go back to Firefox. Oh, no, wait.
Yeah.
Maybe. No, it was Firefox she was having trouble with. I'm having trouble with Chrome. So anyway, it's bouncing now. Can you see it?
Yes, definitely. Okay, so that's good. So
yeah, anytime you see it go dead like that, because see, I'm looking at my big screen on the wall, and so I see it moving. Unless I look to the left and look on the monitor screen, I don't know it's not moving. So just like when it went black before, I didn't know it until you mentioned it. And so if you see that kind of thing, just always mention it.
Fair enough. It was just sitting there frozen, and I thought, well, this is a picture. That's all.
Yeah. So no, it's the market. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so let's move on. We'll quickly go over to gold. About a week back, we forecast a top in gold for January 17th. This is based on reflected wave, the turning point methodology. We do have a seminar coming up in March. I'm going to mention a little more often than I normally do because as we get closer to that, you may have an interest. We just had a webinar yesterday, and this top held the market, and we're now moving sharply lower in gold. We've had six days so far, but three of them have been very strong down days. This is the kind of movement you would normally expect. It doesn't always make this big of a move, but it's a typical reflected wave top. And as I've mentioned, the month of January for us is very important how they close. So we're going to talk about that as we get further on into the month and finish the month. I think we only have five or six trading days left for the month. So they've had a really good sell-off from that top. Wouldn't be surprised to see that. Let's see. So we'll move on from there over to the U.S. Treasury bond market. We talked yesterday and the day before about the 25th being the next important top in this market, in the U.S. 30-year Treasury bond market. Yesterday, we mentioned that the top was likely already in, and that, of course, lower prices would be expected. For those of you who came to the Reflected Wave webinar yesterday, we had forecast on the webinar that we expect lower prices from the top that came one day early. And today, they've really sold them off pretty good. This is pretty surprising, pretty good for many people, surprising. For those of you with Reflected Wave, you're expecting a multi-day decline. They've had a very powerful move down today. And again, this ties in with people looking at the cash market for the S&P, the futures market, and often the bonds go down when the S&P goes up. So, but this is a pretty good sizable move in the bonds here. I'll say it one more time, and actually I was going to mention this. I wouldn't mind, Dwayne, having, in fact, I'd say it this way. I would like to have Rob, our realtor friend out here in Las Vegas, spend a little time next week on one of the programs, maybe 10 minutes, and maybe answer any questions that he can from the listeners. He's very, very skilled in deep knowledge, very well trained in all things related to short sales, foreclosures, any of the blends and hybrids of things that are going on, what your liabilities are, what your responsibilities are, and so on. I feel like what's-his-name on TV pitching a reverse mortgage. What's the guy that says, this is a reverse mortgage? Anyway, he might be of some help, and we'd like to have him on once every few months because the bond market still is high, interest rates are still low, and I just feel strongly that it's a great time to take advantage of something if you can, and he may be able to answer some of your questions, and he's just an independent person that we think it's useful because, listen, if you go out and buy anything, it's considered a trade. You know, everything we do is a trade in some way, shape, or form. So,
Robert Wagner, that's the guy that's doing the reverse mortgage commercials now.
Yeah, and he may have to reverse some of his mortgages if Natalie Woods ends up being murdered. Because, as you know, that's a 30-year-old story. I don't know if you know the whole details, but that has come up several times since her death. And there's been a longstanding suspicion, and I don't want to cast anything more than the suspicion, because suspicion is suspicion. You're not convicting somebody. But this woman fell over and lost her life in a boat trip. And somehow there's a lot of mysterious surroundings around it. There was a lot of heat and tension between two men, Christopher Walken and was it Christopher Walken?
I don't know.
And Robert Wagner. Anyway, and they were on the boat, and somehow she slipped off and was never heard from again. And
Dennis
there was a big
Hopper.
Argument, and there's bruises and all kinds of things. So the thing is that there's a lot of questions around it. And, you know, if he did have something to do with it, it's funny. If you're like me and sometimes watch those shows where I've mentioned this before on the program, I really love the fact that science continues to advance so much so that a case that had happened 35 years ago, where somebody either disappeared or was found, unfortunately, murdered, that 35 years later, there's a guy and he picks a box up out of an evidence room and he just carries it into his desk and he starts going through some of the stuff. And then a few months later, ding dong, he's ringing the doorbell of the guy who they now know murdered that person. And it's a very interesting thing that they're able to do. It's very, very, very much like how Robin Dane, the trading coach, is going out and doing, you know, help in the desert and with the police. And it's all very nice work, and it's community oriented and so on. Well, these people are doing an amazing thing by being able to go back and review these cases and find these people who did these acts, whether they were accidental and they had to, or whether they were purposeful and so on. And I've just found it fascinating. And one of the interesting fields I've always thought, if I wasn't in the markets, one of the fields I would have liked to have gotten into would be forensics, because it's so interesting that you can't do anything without leaving some evidence. It's just a matter of time before literally you're stepping into a room and leaving in 1 second will be able to be known because you've left evidence of some kind. Everything leaves evidence. It's just, can we read it? Can we discover it? And I just find that interesting. So those shows I've always found interesting, and I've kept an eye on this whole thing between Robert Wagner and so on. And I really like him and the acting he's done and all that stuff, but I hope it's not true for his sake. But, you know, we'll see over time that they're really looking into that case again.
You know, Jerry had said that the other guy was Dennis Hopper, but Richard and Brad both say that it was Christopher Walken.
I think it was Christopher Walken. I can't be sure. But the two of them both had a relationship, the classic love triangle with Natalie Wood. She was very pretty. And, you know, for whatever reason, you know, that happened. And apparently Robert Wagner there was a lot of jealousy and a lot of anger and crimes of passion and all that. And so it's not hard to believe. And there's a lot of strange things in the case. You might want to read a little bit about it. Don't jump to any conclusions because there haven't, you know, you just can't know. But I am interested in that because this is one of those classic setups where it's 30-plus years ago, and they're still scratching their head saying, now, wait a minute, what happened here? So we'll keep an eye on that over time. I don't want my thought and memory of Robert Wagner, as an example, to be damaged. I like the guy. But if he did actually throw a human being over the board of a ship and she drowned, you know, I'm sorry, but that doesn't work for me. So you're going to have to solve your problems differently than that, rather than going out and killing people. So you never ask yourself that. Why do people have to kill people? Why not just get out of town and leave and just get on with your life? People really feel the need. If you think about how many murders, I know it's an ugly subject, but murder is a really popular thing. People murder people. A lot of people kill other people. We're not talking about in war. We're talking about in regular everyday life. I don't know how many murders there are a day in America, but there's a lot. Heck, there's a whole lot just in Chicago, where, by the way, they have the strictest gun control laws of any state. So how's that working for you, gun control people? Anyway,
I think you got to be an alderman to carry a weapon there. I think that's how that works.
What's that?
I think you have to be an alderman or something to...
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's move on here. We talked about the Euro already, so we're going to leave that alone.
Hang on, we got another email from Mike Reed here. D, the difference between cash and futures is called a premium, and that is what the buy and sell programs are triggered from. Arbitrage is when it's above or below fair value. Two different things, hard to explain without a long, long explanation and some math thrown in. It's a long story, but futures used to always trade at a premium to cash until about 5 years ago, mostly because interest rates plunged. But premium, the difference between futures and cash, is a formula that includes interest rates, dividend payouts, until that contract expires, time to expiration, and one other component that he's forgotten. But there is a fair value formula. It can be Googled. It's too hard to explain. It can't cash and futures will not be equal until expiration, or if there is a close with the premium well above or below fair value. Long discussion. He'll talk with us about it next week. So
great. That'll
thank
be
you,
fun.
Mike.
We'll do that. Thank you, Mike, for that. Real quick, over to the crude oil. I've mentioned during the week that we have two levels of importance in crude oil, 96.24, 96.25, and 96.04, so about a 20-tick difference. Our preference is to see them close below at or below 96.04. It'll be interesting to see. We're trading at 96.17 right now. We'll talk about this next week because this leads us into, you know, we're really at a critical point here in that market. And then finally, although I could go on, there's a few other things going on here. We do have a nice movement up today if you want to check out Tesla, TSLA. They're doing very well. I do expect the year of 2013 to be a good year for this stock overall, because of this is really more fundamental than anything. It's not really a technical thing, but they're doing well. And there's a lot going on right now. If those of you who are interested in electric cars or interested in, you know, not having to buy gas and stuff, there's going to be steep discounts coming in the Chevy Volt. If they're not already here already, the Ford Focus Electric, which by the way is another fabulous electric car that'll get you about an 80 miles per day range on pure electric. The Nissan Leaf, all these cars are going to take big haircuts in their price this year, right now. And you're going to start seeing some of those discounted prices. The Volt is going to be the last one to fall. I'm not predicting that. That's actually the fact. All the other ones have already come down some. They're going to go down further, but the Volt is going to come down as well. And as I don't know if I've mentioned this in the program, I drive a Chevy Volt. I'm just saying. You
know. Really?
Yeah.
I thought you were actually a public transportation guy.
Yeah.
I don't know where I got that from.
No, I really like it. Okay, so Tesla's running pretty good. Let's take since it's Friday, there's a couple other little markets we might want to look at.
There was a request for us to take a look at Apple just because
sure.
It's a kind of a big deal right now.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's going to take me just a moment here because
this is daily. Man, look at that gap there.
Yeah, it's a wipeout.
Wow, the gap between Wednesday when they reported earnings and Thursday was like a gap down from like 5.10 or something to, I can't even see that number down there. But somebody out there can tell us.
Yeah. Well, down the low today is 437.31 in Apple. That's the lowest low they've made so far. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday from the perspective that we're looking at it from. This means that you don't want to go long this. You do want to be short, if anything, sell rallies into the second quarter of this year, minimum. So let them continue to come down. And then we're going to look at this. As a matter of fact, I spoke to my trading partner yesterday about how we're going to handle this stock, what we're going to do with it. And, you know, we very much plan on being option sellers, either for further decline or for the bottom. So, but we won't even touch the bottom or think about it until we get into the second quarter of 2013. Did you want to say something more, Duane, on Apple?
No, Dave. I did see a headline today that, I don't know, the fall of the stock price has anything at all to do with it, but it seems like they might be trying to beef up their image. They just did a crackdown on some factories in China and found a bunch of underage workers. And so, I mean, hopefully that's just for humanitarian reasons and not part of a PR campaign to kind of prop them up. But that's the only news other than this big decline here. And you know, so many people are saying, you know, Apple's heyday is over, their day in the sun, it's come and gone. I mean, just a few months ago, we were talking about how this was going to be the first ever trillion-dollar company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Weren't
mm-hmm.
we?
Yeah, I wasn't forecasting it, but it sure
could
have been.
No, you weren't forecasting it, but
arguments were made that it was $1 trillion, you know, this was $1 trillion deal.
Yeah, I mean, everywhere you look, that's what the headlines were saying, is that this would be the first trillion-dollar company. And all it needed to do was get – it was at $700 a share. I think it needed to get to 100, roughly. Not 100, but 1,000.
Yeah, 1,000.
And now, I mean, goodness, we're 100 bucks away from being at a 50% discount.
Yeah, that is right. Less than 100, I think, right now.
Yeah, less.
This market is – think about that. All the entire net worth of the company is, as identified by its stock, you're less than $100 away from being at half its total price in a short period of time. And I think a lot of people are seeing that and thinking that. I like the idea, again, of selling rallies or selling time premium above important price levels and letting this market pay you for that now. And then when the bottom's coming in, which is the very minimum, is into the second quarter of this year, I like the short side into the second quarter, then we would at least have an option, no pun intended, to look at the long side from that point. But it's a frightening decline. There's no question about it.
Now, to put that in perspective, February of 2011, not that long ago, the stock was at $200. I mean, that meteoric rise, if there ever was one.
If there ever was one.
Two years ago, the stock was trading at $200 a share. Over 2 years, less than 2 years, it climbed $500 in value off the back of the iPhone. That's really the thing that made Apple. I mean, there's always been the Apple purists, the Macintosh guys, the true computer geeks and nerds, and there's always been that community, that eclectic group of people. But once that phone came out, then the Apple fanboys came out of the woodwork. Suddenly, anything to do with Apple, it was cool, it was clever, it was awesome. And so this thing shot up $500 in 2 years. And so I don't...
Well, let's even take a little bit... Go ahead.
Well, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I can't, on this particular chart here I'm using, I can't draw a fib, but if we do quick math in our head... From 200 to 700, what would be the 50% retracement there, David?
Well,
maybe you can find do it on your chart.
A fib tool. Actually, and I'm sure many of the listeners have some as well.
Yeah, somebody could probably, I see, from 200 to 700, it's $500, so half of that's 250, so 700 minus 250, 450, but that's not right.
We're at about the 50% mark from the low that they made in May of 2010. What I was going to add to what you just said is that actually just a year or two prior to that, believe it or not, Apple in 2009, just a few years back, was trading at $78.
Well, and just shortly before that, it was trading at $12, wasn't it?
Let me see. Well, 12 was way long back. 12 was way back in 04 and 03.
Okay.
But
right.
I'm saying if you think back to all what's happened, it's not that long ago. We can all think 3 years back.
Sure.
Can you imagine that? This stock was trading at $78 in January of 09. And so from January of 09 till just recently, that was that whole rise there. And we've talked about it on the program before, and I think it concerns more than one person. The longer Steve Jobs is gone, it's difficult for people to continue to believe in the company's ability to innovate rather than just compete with the product and the market that they developed. And we'll see how that works out. This is, and one thing I do want to temper all this with is that this is the stock of the company. It's not the company. So the company may actually have, I don't know, they may actually have some really great things planned, and maybe those things start to come out after the bottom comes in and so on. But I will say this. There's likely going to be, here's a technical term, a hell of a rally after the bottom gets put in here. So we really want to watch this because this is one of those extraordinary events. You don't see that often with a company like this, and we would want to take advantage of both potentially on the way down and on the way up.
Now, based on what you can see in my screen here, the move just from 200 to 700, and you really have to do the entire leg to draw fibs. But Jerry just said I was correct with my math, that 450, that is a 50% mm-hmm. retracement from this mm-hmm. low to this high. It's kind of like an optical illusion. It doesn't look like mm-hmm. the halfway point, but I did the math in my head. 700 minus 200 is 500. Divide by 2 mm-hmm. Is 250. 700 minus 250 is 450. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
yeah, that's okay. So, I mean, you know, guys, does that mean we have an incredible bargain on our hands right now? I don't know. It depends on what the future of Apple is. And when Apple came out with the iPhone, there really was no competitor. I mean, there were no other truly smartphones. There were some phones that you could very, in a cumbersome way, you could send text messages with. Oh, I guess there was the BlackBerry. The BlackBerry, you could do, it was like an email machine that you could also make phone calls with. But most cell phones, or the cell phones that I had anyway, it was like the flip open, little secret agent kind of a thing. And if you wanted to send a text message, it was very cumbersome because you had to, you know, the one key was also ABC. And do you remember those phones, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
The phone you had?
Well, actually, I was even behind that. I actually had a rotary dial cell phone. Yeah. I mean, I was really behind the times.
Before the iPhone, I would never send text messages. I just never did because it was just too much trouble. Now, I guess if I'd had one of those phones with the slide-out keyboard or BlackBerry, I probably would have, but I never did. Currently, I send far more text messages than I make phone calls. What about you? Do you send a lot of text messages?
I do when I'm driving. I just hold it right up with the wheel, and I sometimes I swerve a little all bit. Right. But, yeah, I try to get them all done while I'm driving. I'm just joking. I just want to say to that is I purchased – you may have seen it on TV. I actually want to endorse a product. It's called something Go, Get Go, or something. It's a mount for a cell phone. And when I first saw it on TV, I thought, you know, that's pretty clever, and that looks really easy to use. And, you know, the cell phone thing in the car is illegal. It's not illegal to have your cell phone in the car. Go print the actual law out and put it in your glove box. I'm telling you. Get the law as it's written and put it in your glove box, or get a concise synopsis off the internet of the cell phone law. Fold it up, put it in an envelope, and put it in your glove box, because it's not illegal to have a cell phone in the car. It's not illegal to turn one on or to turn it off. It's illegal to use it in making a phone call if it's not hands-free. So, and there's a few other distinctions. So policemen will pull people over and write tickets for the cell phone law because the person had it in their hand. Well, that's okay if they're turning the phone on or off. You have to read the whole law. You could easily say to a policeman when he says, I'm writing you a ticket, and we want to respect the law and it's a great law, but it's a good idea for you to know the law because people will take advantage of it. So I have that copy of the law as it's written in my glove box. So if somebody does pull me over, like did happen, and I reported this on the radio, and he actually was correct. I actually had the internet up on my cell phone while I was driving on a side street, and I was looking at the road and the internet at the same time. But he didn't say to me, I'm writing you a ticket because you had the internet up. He wrote me a ticket because I had the phone in my hand. He didn't care what I was doing with it. Hmm. So go read the law. Make sure you understand it so that if you do get pulled over by a policeman, you can say, with all due respect, officer, actually I am allowed in this case to move the phone or to turn it on or off. But I have to, if I'm going to use the phone to make phone calls, I can, I have to use the hands-free mode and so on. Here's a picture of Dwayne here in his car at his current age dialing on his phone.
Look at that. This is one of the original car phones that had David. It's got the rotary dial.
Yeah. No, that's the way they used to be. It's a beautiful thing.
I think I'm joking, right?
No, I don't think you're joking. Oh. I know that's the way it used to be. That's how we used to dial, and that's how car phones used to be.
Well, I mean, I know that. I mean, I grew up with a rotary phone in our house, but I never knew there was a – I did until I saw this the other day, this little news article. This is back in the 40s.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have another interesting picture here that shows the evolution of the cell phone. I think this is it. Oh, no, that's not it.
Well, while he's looking that, just keep that in mind. Get the law, put it in your – read the law so you understand what it is and what it allows you to do and what it doesn't allow you to do. And it can save you a lot of trouble because anybody who's driving around with the law actually in their car and understands it, if you do get pulled over, you can say, actually, with all due respect, the law does allow me to do such and such and such and such, and it's right here. And so, you know, with all due respect, but I follow the law. And, officer, the reason I carry this with me is so that I know the law. I don't want to break the law. I actually am more responsible than many. I want to be able to know exactly what the law is. And the law allows me to do such and such or doesn't. And you've got me, you know, whatever it is. But it's a good idea because what they're doing is they're writing tickets if you just touch the phone or if you just happen to pick the phone up and move it and so on. And those tickets are not valid, at least in the state of Nevada. So, you know, now that I know the law, I'll put that to use if I have to. But I did buy one of those stands. You've seen it on the ads on TV, and it absolutely is everything they say it is. It's $14.95 plus shipping and handling. Wait till you see what that costs. But in the meantime, it has a sticky surface on it, and you can take your phone and stick it right on there, and it's really, really handy. You can talk on it. You can, you know, watch old reruns of Wild Wild West while you're driving at high speeds. It's fabulous. So check that out. If you see that on TV, you may want to order that. One thing I did find out, if your phone has a case on it that's rubber, like a softer rubber, it doesn't stick the way it's supposed to. And I first thought that it was just a cheapy thing and it didn't really work. But once I took the case off and put the phone sticks on there like nothing. I mean, you can hardly pull the thing off. And all you have to do is just whack right on there, and it sticks, and you're good to go. So it's really very handy, and it makes it so that you actually do have a hands-free phone in your car right there. You don't have to have it in your hands. So that's a much better way to go. See the kinds of things you learn on this radio program? Man, I'm glad I'm on the show.
It's pretty amazing. Jeez. It really is.
Anyway, I think, Dwayne, for me, I think it's everything I have for you today with regard to the markets. And I would like to wish everybody a wonderful weekend, safe and sane. And I'm looking forward to being back here next week. And we may have Rob on next week, Dwayne as well, on one of the days. Looking forward to Mike Reed coming on and telling us a little bit more about the cash futures thing. And
Let's look at Netflix real quick.
Okay. The stock?
No, let's just watch a movie.
Okay, let's do that. I wouldn't mind.
Everybody was laughing at Netflix because it plunged so horribly, but you just can't argue with their business model, their price. Look at that gap. This is their earnings. Mm-hmm. They beat the street by 26 cents. In other words, the analysts said they were going to lose 13 cents a share when they made 13 cents a share. So that's called a 26-cent beat. It gapped from 100 to 140. That's one of the biggest gaps I've ever seen on earnings.
That's really good.
That's crazy. Now, back here, you had that golden cross, they call it. And it's just kind of steadily sideways to higher. And then, boom, $167. Now, I don't think that's the all-time high. Let's see. No. All-time high is back over here at 300. So, here we go. Here's a stock that, even after that huge gap, it's still trading at a 50% discount, roughly, to its all-time high.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have any thoughts? There was from a listener, they had asked if you have any thoughts on Netflix or Priceline.
Let me take a quick look with you. Is it NFL or NLF?
NFLX.
NLX, thank you.
NFLX.
I'm sorry, okay. Okay, let's see. Yeah, that is really a remarkable gap opening there. Well, boy, I tell you, they really took a lot of heat for that in that period where they had changed their pricing and so on, you know, the top that they've made in July of 2011 when that came out. From what I'm looking at, this is very brief and just very quick, but I would expect, and we've talked about, there's some stuff coming together in a number of markets, not just stocks, in the month of February. So I would expect February to mark a top for Netflix. And I don't know enough about the smaller and bigger levels of the stock right now, but this is a very powerful, obviously, and very important move. And I believe that the top that comes in February will be tradable on the short side, although it might be a little scary to do so with this type of momentum. But we should keep, if you will, ask us about it as we continue on into the month of February. I think there's important price levels and so on that could be very easily tied in with this. And I really like to do that. That's one of my big things, is to have the reversal point, the reflected wave turning point, and then a very important price level that they have reached and are testing. Those two things together can be very, they really put together a lot of synergy in identifying the important reversal and having confidence in taking the trade. Because in many, many cases, markets, the question is this the beginning of, this could be the beginning of a much larger move, but time-wise, without regard to price right now, February would normally be the month for a top. So let's talk about this stock as we get into February. I think it's very valuable to look at this because the unusual moves like this are often responded to with equal moves, you know, on the downside and so on, and big swings and so on. So I like the idea of doing that, and good for Netflix, by the way. You know, this was a company that made some decisions that did not make people happy, and they're now, you know, obviously they're going to be much happier. One of the levels, I know somebody's going to say, well, what's some important levels? 175.70 to 175, basically a 70-cent spread there. They haven't quite reached that yet. They've gotten to 171, but 175.70 to 175 would be important, I believe, as an initial level above the current levels, you know, a level that we have not reached yet. That would be an important one for me. So if we, in February, are touching those levels, spiking those levels, and working those levels, that's an early sign of that kind of synergy that we want to put together to utilize a reflected wave in its best form and use the timing and important price levels and put together a really nice trade. So I'm very happy for Netflix, though, because the company in a six-month period went from a $305 stock down to a $62 stock. Now, nobody was having fun during that, and they've bounced back very nicely here, and I hope that they can continue higher here, test some of these levels or higher, and then we'll talk about this into the next month here, into February. So there you are.
They continue to improve and grow their product, and you know, there are any number of online video streaming services out there, but if you look at an infographic, Netflix has probably 80% market share. The price for, you get unlimited streaming for $10 a month, for less than $10 a month. If you go to the iTunes store and you want to rent one movie, it's $4.
Yeah.
Vudu, if you want to rent a movie there, it's like $3-4. I mean, if my local cable company, if I want to go to their on-demand service and rent a movie, it's like $3-4. With Netflix, you get this video library that has, it's chock full of not just movies, but TV shows and documentaries and stuff for kids. I mean, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of titles to choose from, and many of the TV shows, some of which you may or may not have seen when they were on, have 80, 90, 100, 200 episodes. And it's really an enjoyable experience when you can take a TV program and over the course of a month or however long it takes, you can, because when the TV show first came out and it was spread out over 4 or 5 years, you waited week to week, you know, and then you had to wait through the summer and then the fall that came out with the new season. And so you would lose some of the flow, some of the fluidity, the connectivity. But Netflix gives you the ability to watch an episode, you know, an hour's episode with no commercials, 40 minutes, and boom, then you can watch the next episode. I mean, in an afternoon, you can watch like an entire season. It's a whole different experience. And you feel that you get to know the characters better because there's not all that lag time in between episodes.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, me myself, I've never used it, but if I did, first thing right out of the box, I'd be watching Seed of Chucky.
I bet you would.
Because that's one of my favorites. I don't know if you've seen that. It's actually a movie, Seed of Chucky.
No, I'm not big on that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
Not a horror flick guy. All right, here's Priceline at $7.10.
I'm sorry. Yeah, let's do that. I'm sorry to the person who asked. What's the symbol for that?
PCLN. PCLN.
Okay, good. Let's take a look at this. Now, this is really remarkable. This is a remarkable stock. Just right out of the box here, looking at this. You know, we started, the stock had made a high way back in 99 at $993.97. That's a remarkable price just all by itself. That's remarkable. And then just in 2 years, they were trading at $6.33. Can you believe that? I don't know that I've seen a bigger swing in a shorter period of time than going from $9.93 down to $6.
Yeah.
That is just remarkable. That's like a 6, 8%, whatever it is, 99% move down. And to see where the stock is now, this is really an incredible picture. This is probably one, I would have to list this as one of the most incredible relatively short term, you know, over a 10-year period in looking at the big picture stocks I've seen in a long, long time. This is really remarkable. I don't know if you have the capability of putting that.
I don't, not on this chart. This is as far as it'll go.
Yeah, don't worry about it. It's just so that you can see the whole picture, but pretty remarkable. So now, the question I guess is where are we in this stock and what can we expect? Well, first of all, from the perspective that I'm looking at, and this is a first-time look at the stock in a long time, I'm going to say that January is going to mark a very important top for this stock, the year of January. And the reason I'm going out that long is because this stock has had such a big move and there's so much force. This is one of the most unusual stocks I've seen in a long time. So now we can break it down and go into smaller time frames and so on, but I'm just saying as a general rule, from what I'm looking at and just putting together from a first glance view, I would expect the year of 2013 to mark an important top for this stock. Now, the high that they made last year, 2012, was back up, believe it or not, $774.96. That's up from $6. I mean, that is just a remarkable move. That really is. And now it did take some time to do that, certainly. You know, you're talking about a move that took 12 years. But I can show you thousands of stocks over 12 years that did not move $750 or, you know, $770 up. This is a stock that did. And so 2013 would be important. I would really prefer to see 2013 make a new high. And if they do, I will be very happy to, talk about it. And they are doing well in 2013 already. They're trading today, right now, at $711, which is, you know, that's higher than Apple. So they got the thing rolling here pretty nicely. See if there's anything else we can say about it. They're still very much in a strong position. Nothing has changed. But if you needed a price level on the upside, I'd like I would, in order to believe that they're going to get higher and where there might be some shorting opportunities would be at the $736 level. If they reach that, how they treat that level, staying above it, closing above it, would be bullish for higher prices and a break to new highs. Staying, touching that and closing below it would indicate at least a reversal. And I wouldn't be afraid to short a stock like this if they fail at particular levels of importance. But we can talk about it as it continues. They're very strong right now, and I would expect 2013 to mark a top for this stock.
Okay.
So they have their work cut out for them, because if it is going to be, if what I'm saying is correct, all the price movement they need to get done, stock is appropriately named Priceline. I mean, I'm telling you, this thing has made a price line. This is something, this is probably, this is in the top five of unusual stocks that I've seen in my whole life, Priceline.com, what I'm seeing on this chart. Truly amazing. So I'm glad. I thank you for mentioning this. I did not look at this, and I had not seen
Kirk,
this.
Captain Kirk, you know, he was no Steve Jobs, but he was quite the visionary.
Yeah, no, he was. He's a good guy. Love all the commercials with him.
Yep. Okay, so look at the S&P here. We're creeping back up, guys. We've just... Here's the earlier high. We took it out by one tick, it looks like. This high right here was 97.75, and this high was 98. So we got higher by just one tick. Now remember this 99.1500. That's our highest weekly trading zone. It's had difficulty getting there. But it wouldn't surprise me if by the end of the day, we still got 2 more hours to trade. There's still a very bullish tempo to the market here. I don't think we'll close above 1,500 in the futures, but it wouldn't surprise me if we close right at it.
This is a quiet day. It's not a trader's market, but it is a market that is trading, and they are trading higher. So this makes for a really interesting next couple of weeks. So I really like the idea of... if you're new to markets or you're new to CFRN or new to any of this stuff, I think we have a nice period coming in front of us where the 1500s get hit and we start trading in that area. That really starts turning up the volatility. And so looks like some good trading into February and March here. And Dwayne, thank you for having me on. I'd like to wish everybody a wonderful weekend, safe, and see you guys back here next week for another week of watching these markets and hopefully a lot more volatility as we get into these higher and more important, critical even, price levels on the S&P.
David, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you, sir, and I hope you have a great weekend
as well.
And
thank you, Dwayne, and the listeners as well. See you guys on Monday.
All right. Have a great weekend.
You too. Talk to you then.
I didn't notice what time it was.
That's going to pretty much wrap it up for us, although we'll be back in an hour, less than an hour, at 3 p.m. Eastern to talk with Robin Dane, the trading coach. Don't close this window. Leave it open. I'll turn the radio server back on. There'll be some content for you to listen to, but at 3 p.m. we'll be back live with Robin Dane. I just had a question from the trading room from one of the guys, one of the partners who was in the workshop last night. He asked, our new product that we're working on, it's called Simple. That's it, just Simple, because it's simple. It gave us an alert to sell 1480 and a quarter, okay? However, this was the signal candle. On the trigger candle, price never got down to 1490 and a quarter. Price would have needed to trade down to this price right here. Okay, on this candle, price would have needed to come down to this level, 90 and a quarter. See, when this candle finished printing, this appeared on my screen. So 90 and a quarter. Some of you might have seen a tweet go out. I don't know. But it didn't. It reversed. Now we actually have a buy generated by Simple to buy 98 and a half. Okay? Going back to last night, in the workshop, we had a sell when we were in the partners workshop, which was good for 2.25 points. That's all that we got out of that one. And then overnight, by 1490, my tweet was 91, which went out before Simple. See, what I like is when I make a call and Simple comes along and backs it up. When this thing printed by 1490, I was tickled because I knew that was giving, you know, validity to my call for 91. And from 90, we went up to a high here at 97.50. So that was good for 7.5. So in answer to your question there, Pete, this trade, the one we were in the workshop last night, only gave up 2.25 points. This one gave up 7.5. This one did not get triggered. This one has triggered. Okay. Wait a minute. It says buy 98.50. And the high of this candle so far is 98.25. Okay. We need to go one more tick for this thing to trigger. Okay. We touched that blue line. That's 98.50. Okay. And so this thing will be triggered in long. Now, are you going to just take it at face value, or are you going to put this into consideration, this weekly zone? Now, we could spike through this and then sell off, okay? Back to my statement earlier about us not going above 1,500. Price might trade above it, but based on history, I don't expect it to close above 1,500 on the futures. Because this is our highest weekly trading zone. If you go back through all the weeks, through all the months, through the years, you'll see that it's a rare occurrence that price will close outside or above the highest weekly zone or below the lowest weekly zone on any given week. Often it'll close, well, I don't want to say often, sometimes it'll close right in the zone. It'll close right at it. But we're going to watch this. This will be very interesting. I'm glad you even brought that up. Now, Jerry, you just asked, is it better to short at 1,500? Well, I'm not going to blindly sell 1,500 at this point. What I would do is I would wait for it to start coming back down through it. Now, because I have this information to work with as well, because Pete brought it up and I went over and took a look at it, this is a product, guys, where it prints the buy and sell order directly on your chart. Okay. It just tells you what to do. Now, it's still in alpha. It's not even in beta yet. Partners will be the first ones to beta test it. Partners will be the first one to have full access to it. The rest of the world will have, well, it. I don't know that it's never going to be made a standalone product, I don't think. But certainly partners will always have access to it. That's how we do things. As we roll out new products, they go to the partners. When you become a partner, that means you not only have a lifetime ownership or license to every tool currently in our toolbox, but anything that we add into the future, you're grandfathered right in. Okay. So if partners last night were asking a lot about Simple because they're excited because they know that they're first in line to get their hands on it when it comes out or when it goes from alpha to beta, they'll be the beta testers. And then eventually, you know, we'll have it all the bugs worked out, but the performance so far has been very promising, and we're just working with it right now in the S&P 500. Once we get that completed, then we'll begin to look at different markets. We'll begin to look at some currency pairs, currency futures. We're going to be using it on equities, a lot of different things. So the one way to guarantee that you always have access to our latest developments is by becoming a partner. And the first step to becoming a partner is to take the free trial. CFRN.net/apply. Now, the thing that makes us different than other folks, not that we're better, I'm not going to say that we're better than anybody else, we just try to be more transparent than a lot of folks. Okay? We don't want you to just come watch us trade in the live trading room, then you pay money for some indicators, and then all of a sudden you go, well, gee, this isn't how I thought it was going to be. See, we want you to come, take the free trial, watch us trade in the live trading room, but we also want you to download the platform, okay? These charts, these indicators, we want you to put them on your computer. No credit card required. We trust you, all right? And it's not some hobbled version. It's the full thing. You get to not only hang out in the live trading room and watch us put on and take off trades for a week, you get to use the platform. You get to use the indicators. You get to get into the simulator, put on and take off trades for an entire week. So, you know, that buyer's remorse thing that you go through when you buy sometimes different systems and whatnot, well, it's because you thought it was going to be one thing, but then when you actually got around to using it, you found out it was, or when you finally got the chance to use it after you paid for it, you found out it was a little different. See, we want you to try it out first. That's how confident we are and how much we believe in what we offer. We want you to use it first. Don't just look at it. Don't just think about it. Use it. Put it on, man. Download the platform. Put the indicators on your screen, on your computer. Put on and take off trades. At the end of a week, if you've done your part, you'll know if it's right for you or not. You won't. There'll be no question in your mind. If you haven't downloaded the platform, if you haven't placed trades in the simulator using our indicators and our methodology, you won't know. And you'll have that nagging, gnawing, eh. Okay? Now, I pasted it in the room earlier that so far this month in the live trading room, $33.95 per contract. Okay, $3,395 per contract, excluding commissions, in the first 17 trading days of 2013. If you're a one-contract trader, that's a figure you look at. If you trade more than one contract, then you multiply it times whatever that number might happen to be. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Trading is risky. It's not suitable for all people. You should always check with a licensed investment professional before you make any investment decision. And I'm going to say this. If anybody wants you to purchase their indicators, then you say, okay, fair enough. Let me use them for a week first. And then if I like them, if I actually made some money with them, even though it's in a simulator, if you just, you know, if I was able to make some money with your indicator, let me use them for a week. And if I make some money, I'll buy your indicator set. I want to know the name of the vendor that tells you they can you can use their indicator set for 5 days. Because I'd like to applaud them, because I think that's a fine way of doing business. I happen to know, at least according to my own research, we're the only ones that do that. Now, I'm sure there'll be some others. And there should be. I think everyone that wants to sell you an indicator set should let you use the doggone thing. Because historical charts are one thing, but watching it traded in a live environment is, that's a step up. That's a little better. But still, you know, isn't the best way to know if something is for you or not to actually use it? I mean, when you go to buy a new car, you see the commercials, and boy, man, that car looks great. You go to the showroom, now you can touch the car. Wow, it is awesome. But until you get in it and drive it, do you really know anything much about that vehicle? No, you don't. So, if you're, you know what? And if you're not willing to put forth the time and effort and energy to actually download the platform, install the indicators, and use them for a week, I dare say you're probably not ready to start trading yet. And that's okay, because you may have a busy life, you may have a lot going on. I'm not saying that in a bad way to anyone, but that right there could be a huge warning red flag to you. Hey, you know what? If I don't have the time to download the platform and these guys will let me use their stuff for free for a week to see if it's right for me. If I can't commit the time required to do that, I probably should put this trading thing on hold, you know, for a couple weeks or a month until time permits me to do that. Because you know what? No matter how great a methodology is or how great the indicators are, unless you have the time to show up and learn it and then put it to use, it won't benefit you. It'll just gather dust on a shelf. This would be a virtual shelf and virtual dust, but you get my picture. Or you get my point, because I painted a nice picture, right? Okay, that's it. I'm just saying, we'd love you to take the free trial, but if you're going to take it, then do the deal. You know, actually use it so that at the end of a week, you know whether or not it's right for you. If it's right for you and you decide to become a partner, then Michael and I commit the next 90 days of our life to you, making sure you understand how to use it properly. Okay? So that's a big commitment on our part. And it's important for us to know that you've done your due diligence before you make that commitment. Okay? Don't get me wrong. We want to grow our community. We had a great meeting last night. And to those of you, Cliff and all, and the others who had, you know, so many nice things to say, I really appreciate you guys. You'll never know how meaningful that was for me. And I speak for Michael, who's not here now, but it was very meaningful for him as well. Okay? So thank you both, all of you, very much. Yeah, he really was. He really was outstanding. What a great guy. Now, let me just scroll through the chat box really quick, because I want to take a break before I come back for the Coach's Corner. Jerry asked, can Simple be developed into an auto trader? Well, Jerry, it may be eventually. We're just trying to get everything ironed out now. It'll be released as a manual, but the way we're building it, yes, it could become an auto trader. Oh, I'm not that big on auto traders, to be honest. But that's a whole other story. Some people do like them and use them, and so I don't want to speak negatively about them. It's just not my cup of tea, but we might build it so that for those who it is their cup of tea can certainly use it that way. And to those of you typing in kind comments again now, thank you. I really appreciate it. Can I program Simple to send out an auto tweet? Yeah, we would love to do that and a text message. That's what we're working on. Okay, I think I got every question. If anybody has a question that didn't get answered today, please type it in really quick. I'm going to be back top of the hour with Robin, the trading coach, for today's edition of the Coach's Corner. Look at this thing. It's climbing. This is the daily chart. Okay, notice that at this trend line on the daily chart, we've yet to have a candle. There might be one tick of space between that trend line and that candle, but we're not going to argue that. So far, everything's still attached to this trend line, either below or above. Remember I said I wanted to see a breakaway where there's no touch before I get too convinced that the market is going to go take out the all-time highs? And that's really the next question. We broke 1,500. The cash market broke 1,500. Is it now going to go on to take out the all-time highs? That remains to be seen. Mario says, can you email me the link to the video you had mentioned last night that has something to do with the PDF trading plan? Yeah, Mario, I will. I'll email you the link to the video, and once you've watched the video, let me know, and then I will email you the accompanying PDF, okay? And I'll do that as soon as I come back from break, while I'm on with Robin, or as soon as Robin and I finish. I'll make sure I get that. To any of you that are partners, if you have not watched the trading plan video, how to put your trading plan together, this weekend, make a commitment to watch that video and then email me once you watch it so that I can send you the accompanying PDF so that you can print it out, put it in a binder, put it on your desk, and over the next 2 weeks to a month, you formulate both your business plan and your trading plan, because both of those are critical for your success as you build your e-mini futures trading business. That's what it is. It's a business. You're going to get out of it what you put into it. Okay? You can't take a half-hearted approach. This requires your focus and your attention. Jeanette, I'll send it to you too. In fact, here's what I'll do, guys. I'll go into the partners area. I'll find that video and the PDF, and I'll drag them to the top of the members area so that when you guys go into the members area later today, I'll have it highlighted some kind of way right at the top so you'll see it. And you'll just have them both right there. The reason I wanted you to watch the video and then I email you the PDF is because I really want you to watch the video, because we talk about it in depth. And I know the video takes a couple hours. You just want to jump into the plan and start creating your plan. But I'd really like you to watch the video and then read the PDF, because the PDF is going to be on your desk and you're going to be working with that thing for a couple weeks to a month to forever, okay? Because that's the building, that's the foundation of the business you're building. So just be patient, watch the video, read the PDF, and go to work. And know that myself and Michael and Bert and Leslie, as you begin to write that plan, that business plan and that trading plan, we're here to help you. Now, Bert and Leslie, they're licensed, so they can offer you advice, individualized advice that Michael and I can't. We have to make all of our, you know, everything that we offer it to a group, and you understand how that works. Like if you have X number of dollars and it's in an IRA or this or that, you have to take those questions to them. I'm trying to write my plan. I need to know how to do this, how to allocate. They are the go-to folks for those questions. Okay? 866-928-3310. Now, the good news is when you call that toll-free number, one of them is going to answer the phone. Most times it's Leslie. But my point is that one of the two of them is always in the office. Even when they're sick, even when their kids are sick, they take care of business. They answer the phones. I cannot go give those guys high enough marks for all that they do for the CFRN partners. It is above and beyond the call of duty. And I just want them to know how much that we all, you know, myself, Michael, the partners, man, we appreciate you guys more than you'll ever know. So with that said, I keep threatening to close shop and take a break. So let me go do that. Okay, the futures have gotten as high as 1498.50. Point and a half away. Now remember, old simple said to buy 98.50. Okay, it hit 98.50. So if you took that trade, if you bought 98.50, you're in a little bit of a drawdown right now. Okay, but most of these bigger picture trades are going to have a drawdown. This one here said to buy 1490. That one didn't have much of a drawdown at all. Okay, ran 7.5. This one didn't trigger. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about it when I come back at the top of the hour. Okay, I'll leave this chart running for you guys right now so that you can watch it. Is the workshop number 87? I don't think so, Daniel. I think it's older than that. I'll go check, and you know what? I'll send an email to all the partners with the. Well, you know what? I'm going to do what I said. I'm going to drag it to the top. I'm just going to highlight the video into PDF. I'm going to tell you it's best that you watch the video first and then read the PDF. But you know what? You're an adult. Do it however you want. This will make it easy for all the partners. Okay, I'll just highlight it. This is the trading plan video and accompanying PDF workbook. Okay? All right. I got to run. I'll be back, though. Don't close this room if you want to be a part of the Coach's Corner, because you'll just have to log right back in. All right? So just leave this open. Leave it running. I'll put on something for your listening pleasure. And it is the weekend. Okay? So be sure to spend some quality time with your family. Of course, I'll see you all in church on Sunday. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions.